Tikal, Palenque, Chichen Itza, Yaxchilan. Ancient homes of the Maya people. The question of the disappearance of the Maya culture has long fascinated historians and archaeologists. What caused the abandonment of these ancient cities? Why and to where did the Maya people vanish? Today's consensus suggests that the answer to these questions lie in more than one factor: overfarming and geopolitical changes. I'm very privileged to live on the east coast of Australia, and I love living here. But every place that I've lived, Australia, Britain, Canada, there's a dark side to the history. The colonization of other people's lands, the oppression of Indigenous peoples, and the suppression of their ancestral narratives. And the story of what happened to the Maya holds all those three factors together. It took the Catholic forces of Spain 170 years to all but destroy the culture of the ancient Maya. As the Maya migrated north into the Yucatan Peninsula and into what today is Mexico, their society became altered, their kings and queens ruling with ever greater fear over their people, glorying in their military conquests as their geopolitical fortunes waned, and maintaining control over their people through terrorization rooted in a practice of human sacrifice. Though their society continued to advance in sophistication, this brutal element raises a question over their model of priesthood and leadership. In my Eden series and in my new book, The Eden Conspiracy, I argue that this fusion of Mayan sophistication and Mayan brutality lay in their memory of governance by a previous civilization. And the clues to this are found in a carving in the city of Yaxchilan. Among the reliefs and carvings is a sequence of scenes carved into the limestone lintels of Yaxchilan's ancient buildings. In particular, structure 23 shows the details of a mysterious ceremony. The star of this scene is a queen of the Jaguar dynasty, the Mayan queen Xuc. What's especially interesting about this scene is that Queen Xuc is in a location called the Place of the Voices. She is there to hear something. And so it's remarkable that she's wearing what to the modern eye looks like a Bluetooth device with an earpiece and a mouthpiece. Is this how Queen Xuc is going to receive communication from afar? Is this what the Place of the Voices is about? Is it really a place of ancient technology? Well, there are a couple of possibilities, because you look at that Bluetooth. Is it a functional Bluetooth, or is it the evocation of a Bluetooth device that their ancestors had seen worn by a previous civilization? Now, there is a clue in the wider scene, because what is depicted is a bloodletting ceremony. And the intent of that ceremony was to alter the state of consciousness of Queen Xuc to the point where she would become able to interact with beings of another kind, draconian beings who would then give her instructions for governing over the Mayan people. The bloodletting was the means of altering her state of consciousness to the point where that was possible. Now, that clues me that that's not a real Bluetooth she's wearing. It is the evocation of something their ancestors had seen. In the past, the Maya had seen and written about the technology of a previous civilization who had governed over their ancestors. And their successors, the human kings and queens, wore emblems motifs that were evocations of that earlier technology. And because it wasn't functional, they had to have a shamanic ceremony to create contact experiences. The Maya people were not the only people to use the representation of someone else's technology in this way. We find it in the Bible as well. Now, this device that looks like a Bluetooth is something I call a vested object, one of the accoutrements that the priestly kings and queens of the Jaguar dynasty would wear that would represent their wisdom, their advancement, and their right to rule over the Mayan people. But what is a vested object? On the 3rd of October 2022, in Scotland, Ian Hamilton has died at the ripe old age of 97. One of Scotland's most respected QCs, he has served the country for decades as an eminent criminal lawyer. The whole country will honor him and mark his passing, and a film has already been made to tell his story, with the actor Robert Carlyle taking the part of Ian Hamilton. But why? Because on Christmas Day in 1950, along with three compatriots from the University of Glasgow, Ian Hamilton got on his motorbike and rode down to London, to Westminster in particular, where they used a crowbar in the dead of night to get into Westminster Abbey. And there they located 336 pounds of sandstone, which they lifted from the building, that's about 152 kilos, and drove at breakneck speed, evading police, all the way back over the border into Scotland, where they deposited it at Arbroath Abbey. Now, what was all that about, and why did its arrival in Scotland create a party atmosphere there, but fears in Westminster of revolution and Scottish secession? Well, the answer is that it was a very particular piece of stone. It had been part of the throne used for the coronation of the kings of England since 1296. Prior to that, it was used for the coronation of the kings of Scotland. It's called the Stone of Scone, or the Stone of Destiny. The English kings wanted it because they believed vested in that stone was the authority to rule over Scottish lands. It had been used to crown Scottish kings, but prior to that, had a story that took it back to Ireland, and then all the way back to the Holy Land, to Jerusalem. Once again, we have the idea that the right to rule is vested in the authority of previous cultures or even previous civilizations. Ian Hamilton's seizure of the Stone of Destiny, taking it back to Scotland, was a statement about Scottish independence. And where they left it in Arbroath Abbey was the place in 1320 where the Scottish barons, the clan leaders, had come together to sign the Declaration of Scottish Independence, which they sent to the Pope for him to defend their sovereignty. Vested objects representing the right to rule are a widespread phenomenon. We find it in the Jaguar dynasty of the Maya, in the Stone of Destiny of Scotland, and similarly, in Ghana, West Africa, is the story of the Golden Throne of the Ashanti people. When Britain went into Ghana in 1821, it was with a promise to shore up the authority of the ruling factions and help them to deal with insurgents. We will place a major military presence in your country and it will shore up your authority. Well, that was the deal, and of course in time it emerged that British forces were there to protect British interests. And yet there was always a feeling that the British presence in Ghana was not going to be forever, was not legitimate, because they were never able to obtain the Golden Throne, the vested object of the leading tribe of Ghana, the Ashanti people. They kept their vested object hidden in a forest to prevent any British body from ever sitting on that throne. The idea was that the authority to rule over lands in Ghana was vested in a special object, the Golden Throne or the Golden Stool, All these emblems can be found in Jewish story as well. The tribes of Israel also had a golden throne that represented the right to rule over the tribes of Israel. And just like Queen Shuk's Bluetooth, it also represented an ancient technology for communication. But it was a technology that the Hebrew people didn't know how to operate because it was the technology of a previous civilization. Like the Ashanti Golden Throne, the Ark of the Covenant represented the right to govern the tribes of Israel and the power to obtain guidance from on high. Without ever explaining how, the biblical narrator indicates that the function of the Ark was to facilitate remote communication between the king when seated on the Ark and the powerful Yahweh, who mysteriously was otherwise inaccessible. In Exodus 25, Yahweh tells Moses that when he is in cathedra, meaning when he is sitting on the throne built into the ark, I, Yahweh, will meet with you and give you all my commands for the Israelites. Rather like the Pope when he is in cathedra, so Moses' words, spoken when he's seated on the ark, will carry the full authority of Yahweh and must therefore be believed and obeyed absolutely. Now, there's an interesting parallel there between the Ark of the Covenant and the Bluetooth of Queen Shuk. Both the king on the Ark of the Covenant and Queen Shuk in her bloodletting ceremony are intending to achieve remote communication with a draconian entity who formerly ruled over their people. And their expectation of information, guidance, and authority is that it will come from that non-human source. Both stories speak of a non-human layer to the governance of human society, rooted in the deep past. Both cultures had evocations of technology that they hoped and expected would make this possible. Now, in the case of the Hebrew story, alongside the Ark of the Covenant, were other communications devices, the Urim and the Thummim. But the way they are written about strongly suggests that neither the narrator nor the practitioners really knew how these worked. And the hint is that they were really low-tech depictions of high-tech phenomena from another civilization, from a previous culture. Now, we know that the Philistines, who were neighbors of the tribes of Israel, regarded the Ark of the Covenant as Israel's vested object. They believe it represented authority to rule and to govern, which is why they stole it. And the stories surrounding the Ark of the Covenant suggest that's how the tribes of Israel saw this device too. It was not only a possibly non-functional communications device, but it was also the place where they put all their vested objects. So there was the staff of Aaron, number one officer to Moses, representing his authority. There were the tablets of stone, recognizing Moses' authority to make law. And then there was a jar of manna, representing the supernatural power of Yahweh to generate food from out of nothing. All these vested objects were put there together to house the authority to rule and to govern. At the coronation of King Charles III, we see the scepter, the orb, the crown with a jewel from this dominion and gold from this dominion, a sapphire from this dominion, so on and so forth, all representing the right of the Windsor family to own lands in other people's countries and exercise dominion over them. So vested objects are very important. The continuation of crown power in Britain is a phenomenon all its own, considering the major changes made from 1215 on with the signing of the Magna Carta, where the barons got together, acted in solidarity to curtail the power of the crown. And then you had the abolition of the office of the king in 1649,
and the execution of King Charles I, and then the glorious revolution in the 1680s to limit the power of the crown now that they had reappointed a king, and to move the power to govern from the crown to government. And then you had major changes in the 1800s, extending the voting franchise to all adult males, and in the 1900s to all adult females. You had the labor movement, new cadres of leaders coming into parliament to campaign for laws that would benefit ordinary Britons, not just the 1%. So huge social changes, and yet, even today, the royal family exercises considerable power. Every new prime minister, although democratically elected, can only take office once they've sworn allegiance to the senior member of the Windsor family. No member of parliament is able to take their seat until they've taken an oath of allegiance to his or her majesty. So no Republican can ever sit in parliament in Britain. And after all those changes, you go to parliament, only 46% of them are democratically elected. 54% are either distant relatives of the king or queen, or they were appointed by the king or queen using powers loaned to the prime minister. So the persistence of the old powers is something to be wondered at. Could it be connected with the fact that Britain's vested objects are the possession of the crown, not the possession of parliament? Britain's vested objects are the possession of the Windsor family, not of the Prime Minister of the day. Is it possible that those things matter?
Thanks for watching. Check out our official website at fifthkind.tv to watch the full documentary. Follow the links in the video description.
If you enjoy our content here on Fifth Kind TV and would like to support our work, please would you consider subscribing to our new website, fifthkind.tv. Here we will have our full catalogue of material, along with exclusive access to interviews and documentary content. Sign up today, become part of the community, become part of the conversation. Thank you so much for your support, and I'll see you there.